I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Chris Wilson and Miguel Gandert. They are co-authors, well, Miguel is a photographer and Chris Wilson, author of The Plazas of New Mexico, a brand new book about which there will be a panel discussion on Sunday, October 16th at 2 in the afternoon at the New Mexico History Museum Auditorium here in Santa Fe. It's free and open to the public and will be followed by a book signing. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
It's great to be here.
Thank you.
So the plaza is a phenomenon that goes back, well, centuries if not millennia. Let's talk about the plaza in New Mexico going back as early as the plazas in Indian pueblos. What are the first plazas that we know of?
Well, the first ones are probably about 700, and they're people starting to build...
The year 700,
yeah. And they're building villages of one or two dozen massed rooms, often an L shape or a crescent shape facing southeast, with the packed earth in front where they cook their food and socialize. That's the first kind of plaza space. By the year 1000, 1050 in Chaco Canyon, Pueblo Bonito, these are several hundred room buildings, three, four stories, very tightly defined around a plaza. The rooms are terraced and they step down and they really look at the dance plaza and they look at the space where the circular kivas are. So it's a millennium old tradition.
And what were the different functions of the plaza? I mean, we're talking ritual and we're also talking everyday life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and we're talking Pueblo and Hispanic plazas, Anglo courthouse squares, and the cultures have different takes. The Pueblo one is residential because it's residential room blocks around the plaza, which is a space for a cycle of ritual dances, maybe 35 dances through the course of the year, and there's a great religious focus and intensity. The Spanish plazas also are residential courtyard houses surrounding them, and then the church is right there, so they also have a strong religious identity. There's a shift to a secular, capitalist culture in the Anglo courthouse squares. Obviously, the courthouse, government's at the center, but surrounded by business blocks with commercial storefronts on the ground floor. But then above, the offices of the attorneys and the land surveyors and the real estate companies that have business in the courthouse. So it's kind of an alliance between government and commerce.
It was striking to me, looking at this book and reading what you wrote, how much more apparently similar the Native American and Spanish uses of the Pueblo were than the Spanish and the Anglo uses of the Pueblo.
That's true in what I just said, the more religious residential scale. When you get to the villas, the administrative center, so Santa Fe, Santa Cruz up by Española, Albuquerque, and then El Paso del Norte, which is now Juarez and was part of New Mexico, you've got a government component. So you've got the Palace of the Governors, you've got the offices of the government officials there. There are commonalities between the Hispanic and the Anglo. So for instance, the church sits on the high side of the plaza in the Spanish tradition, and you have a kind of formal axial ascent up into the church. And a similar kind of Euro-American thing goes on with the courthouse, where you're going up the steps and doubling back, and you're ascending, in that case, not to a religious chamber, but to the courtroom.
So how have, in the last few hundred years, how have the uses of the plaza changed? I mean, plazas seem to go through states, and of course it's not the same for every town in New Mexico either, but they seem to go through states of ascent and then just decline and decay and then rejuvenation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, if we look back about 150 years ago, a big change was that the original Spanish plazas were packed earthen multipurpose spaces. The militia could muster there, a market could take place, there could be a religious procession. And starting in Santa Fe in 1863, the first plaza park went into one of those spaces. So it starts to take on less of a mixed use and more of a public celebration, everyday amenity of being able to sit in the plaza. And then, of course, the rise of the automobile and the way in which our whole culture has changed since the mid-1920s, when the automobile starts to have a big impact. People moved to the suburbs. They, began shopping in shopping centers. You know, that becomes a kind of an alternative space. And so in a lot of communities, the plazas have lost their vitality. I think the ones that are strongest have tourism as one of the components. You know, you can kind of think of Taos, Santa Fe, Albuquerque, Mesilla, you know, as the examples of that. One of the things that's going on, and really one of the reasons we did the book, is that because of the challenges of sustainability, of fossil fuel depletion, of global warming, there's a whole movement. It goes under various names: new urbanism, smart growth, sustainable communities. We're going to have to develop alternatives which are a little bit denser, which are tied to mass transit, better mass transit. And one of the things we're saying is that for that to be an attractive alternative, we need to rediscover some of the things that gave quality of life to people living in those denser situations earlier. And one of the key things is to have a signature public space for everyday enjoyment and for a kind of expression of community identity. And, you know, we'll talk more about Santa Fe's Plaza, but it's kind of an ultimate example of a great set of public celebrations and events.
It's interesting that you say that one of the things that keeps a plaza kind of alive and successful is tourism, because one of the just almost cliche things that you hear about Santa Fe and about New Mexico Plaza, particularly Santa Fe, is, oh, we used to go shopping there. We used to have the Woolworth and the shoe store and everything there, and now it's just a bunch of tourist stores, and it's not real anymore.
What's a different space? I mean, I grew up in that Santa Fe. You went down and you bought your Levi's, you bought your clothes there. But it was also the focal point of different communities, different celebrations, and it's always been kind of a space. It's the confluence of the multiple cultures in New Mexico. Still, we have, Spanish market, we have Indian market. We do have an influx of tourism, and that's sort of what has made it more viable. It's as a community, and I think one of the things that the book cites is that the plazas are constantly evolving, and the ones that evolve the best to function within the needs of the community work best. You know, Santa Fe is still the plaza is a very contested space. There used to be a high school down there. There used to be a mid school down there. And, the kids would come to the plaza. Well, that created problems in the 60s, so they changed the identity. Then it became like the shopping mall, and it always was that. Then we built, DeVargas Center, and suddenly that focal point changes and then evolves into what's become an important part of the economy of Santa Fe. But yet it's still a contested space. It's a space where the kids hang out in the summer. It's a kid, it's a place, I show pictures and you can immediately, I say plaza rats. And everybody who grew up in Santa Fe of the last, 15 or 20 years at a college students or whatever, they all know the plaza rats because that's a community that still uses the space. The pet parade still goes by there. The museum's still there. The Palace of the Governors, of course, and the market. Yeah, it's touristy, but it's also still a vibrant core that people rally around in Santa Fe.
Well, and all the music there, like Santa Fe Bandstand.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody goes out sooner or later and goes dancing or listening to music in that space.
Yeah, and it's a great example of urban design in a sense. Stefanos Palazoides, one of the editors of the book with Chris, really opened my eyes. I grew up here, so I think, wow, yeah, this is Santa Fe, and all cities are like this. First time I traveled out of Santa Fe and went to places that didn't have flat roofs or didn't have something else. But it was really interesting because when this started as a part of a class that Chris and Stefanos taught, we were in the Santa Fe Plaza, and he was comparing it to the Rambla in Barcelona and saying, this is a great example of urban design. Well, it opened my eyes, and I think the book is meant to open eyes of people on the viability of the plaza, the territorial square, and even the Pueblo plazas, and how we can learn from them. And Santa Fe is one that works really, really well.
We're talking to Chris Wilson and Miguel Gandert about the book, The Plazas of New Mexico. One of the things that It's one of those moments where something that's really obvious but you never noticed just comes popping out of your book, which is that cultural identity, how we define ourselves, is based so much on how we spend our time and what we call important. And if that, how we spend our time and what we call important, happens in public spaces as opposed to, you know, around the dinner table or in your backyard, those are very big differences in culture.
Well, I think so, and I think the Occupy Wall Street, you know, Occupy America that's going on now, you know, an attempted political mobilization to challenge the maldistribution of wealth in this country and political power gravitates to public space. You know, if you don't have public space, you know, not only do you not have a face-to-face community, but you can't really have a democracy. And, you know, shopping malls have the right to prohibit political speech, you know, so, you know, folks aren't going there. You know, they're going to the parks, they're going to the streets, they're going to the public spaces.
Yeah, it's very interesting because when you talk about political change, it always goes back to saying nothing's going to happen until people take to the streets. And whatever you do, signing petitions from the coziness of your laptop or whatever, it's not the same as going outside and being together in one way or another. Whether that be protest, whether that be dancing, listening to music, whether that be hanging out. I mean, I'd rather be a plaza rat than a mall rat, because it's fundamentally non-commercial public space in which, within the boundaries of the law, you can do whatever you want.
There's a great contestation going on. And I think the way Chris tied it into what's going on in Wall Street, I mean, they're occupying space at UNM, not at Civic Plaza, which is in Albuquerque, which is an inhumane design of a public space where people come for music, but you'd never go there to hang out because of the concrete and the Santa Fe. You know, people complain you have to replace the lawn every year. Well, that's part of having a public space. That's part of having a place that the community will come together. You know, and it does have its sense of protest. There's a couple of photographs in the book about an AIDS walk that starts where? You start at the plaza, you end at the plaza. You know, those are the spaces that people identify with Santa Fe. And they are just so alive. And they're where civilization happens. I mean, and I think that's one of the things we hope. The book has over 100 historic photographs. It has almost 100 of my photographs. And then it has drawings. And it's like sort of meant to be a primer for how we can look at these places and learn fundamentally how to use this. I think architecture for the long time, you know, wanted to say we could build buildings that change the world, not realizing that in the modernist mode where you build masterpieces, well, that's really exciting. But it's almost more important the spaces around the buildings in which people can be,
right,
people can exist, is what this book is really about and meant to examine.
It's an extraordinary book. I mean, I was reading through this and looking at the pictures and the drawings and the photographs and everything, and the old ones and the new ones. And one of the things that was really striking about it to me was that, Miguel, your photographs, they blend so nicely with the historic photographs. And it made me feel like there's such a continuity here in New Mexico between the old and the contemporary. And it's not just because you take primarily black and white photographs, but it's like we're the same people in the same spaces evolving. But I was thinking if you had the old and the new in some city back east, it would be like night and day. You could barely recognize it.
Well, in a lot of places, the plazas are gone. I mean, Tucson had two great plazas, and they were urban renewed out of existence. You know,
right.
So if you go, in some places, you find a parking lot if you go looking for the old plaza. And so we're really fortunate not only to have a plaza like the one in Santa Fe, which is as important a public space as any other in the United States. It's got a 400-year history. It's just incredibly rich. But in the book, we identify and we document about 70 of these community spaces. And they're all across the state, and many of them are in decline. You know, many of them are holding on, but I think they have the bones of, you know, community public space and of walkable, denser community nodes.
I think one of the things that was interesting to me, and it's nice to hear you say that about the photographs, that they feel like they're timeless. I mean, the only thing that we really did was I picked a specific camera that would do long, thin frames because I think it helped articulate the space. But what the drawings and the different diagrams and things freed me up to put people into the spaces so that the photographs shot primarily with wide angle are layered, so you see the plaza behind it, you see a buildings behind it, you see the layers of space. But because of the camera, it allowed me also to look at and examine the intimate ways that people use, you know, from the Plaza Rats to La Conquistadora or Nuestra Señora de la Paz coming through for Fiesta. You know, all of those kinds of uses got to be in a part of the book, and those linked with the old pictures of the Fiesta Parade and the old pictures of how, and seeing how Santa Fe's changed, but fundamentally the design has worked for each generation that's gone through it.
You know, it's been a real pleasure and a privilege to work with Miguel and to see the way that he works, because he basically puts people at ease, you know, and he steps into the social situational frame, you know. So if the frame is three young women on the Santa Fe Plaza sitting down near the monument, he's able to come up, become a part of that social circle. And so what you're seeing in the photograph is the frame of social interaction, and you're stepping into that frame.
And you're seeing also a lot of music. I guess you like taking pictures of musicians?
Well, music and ritual is really important to me. I mean, my first big book was Nuevo México Profundo that primarily focused on ritual throughout the Rio Grande Corridor. Somehow Santa Fe wasn't in that book. It was really interesting to me, the town I grew up in, because I needed another frame to find Santa Fe, and the frame became the plaza. And there's a lot more pictures that aren't in the book, which is always the hard part of the book. But yeah, we were there for Fiesta, we were there for AIDS Walk, we were there for, you know, Spanish Market. You know, it's just an amazing kind of different things. It's really hard to photograph Indian Market because it is so crowded. I mean, the space becomes almost the population of the city of Albuquerque.
Right, right. Now, let's talk a little bit about the Santa Fe Plaza and the history and evolution of that space.
Well, sure. The plaza is probably laid out in 1610, when Oñate, sets up the capital here, follows the Spanish laws of the Indies, which were a set of town planning ordinances. It was originally a long rectangle that stretched all the way up to where the cathedral is now, and the precursor of the cathedral was a little bit north over where Cathedral Place Park, if that's what it's called, so that it was on the middle of the high side of the plaza. Then, of course, with the Pueblo Revolt of 1680, the Spanish survivors of the revolt flee south to El Paso del Norte, and Piro and Tewa Pueblo Indians from the Galisteo Basin and the Espanola Valley occupy Santa Fe. They're there for 13 years, and of course they're going to follow their cultural patterns. So they develop a multi-story terraced pueblo with two plazas and with a kiva in each one of those. So when the Spanish come back, they struggle to reassert their image of what Santa Fe should be. And that's probably the root of how the plaza got whittled down to the current square from the larger rectangle. It's a Spanish governmental center, so people with all kinds of petitions and wishes and grievances make their way to the plaza, to the governor, with their petitions for land grants. In the early 1840s, there's a delegation of Ute Indians who come down from what's now the New Mexico-Colorado border because some of their people have been killed by Spanish traders going through there. And they, they're petitioning for some kind of monetary redress for the loss of these people. And it's interesting because there are two stories. The one that Governor Martinez, at that time, reports is, well, you know, they were unruly and they attacked us, and so we had to fight back and drive them out of the town. Well, there's an oral tradition that lives on up on that northern New Mexico border that talks about the governor having hid troops behind a tapestry, and they fall upon them in the palace of the governor. So, you know, the disagreement.
Right.
You know, and that's one of, you know, you could cite 20 historical episodes that are as rich and riveting as that.
And the use of the plaza, I mean, Fiesta, for example, kind of fell into decline to where it wasn't happening at all and then got revived, 100 years ago or approximately?
Yeah, the proclamation for the Fiesta in the early 1700s was a commemoration of the Reconquest, and it did fall into decline, and then in 1911, 1912, 1919, the community, headed by the Museum of New Mexico, develops a fiesta, which is cast, you know, in historical terms, and, you know, very important expression of Hispanic cultural identity. It's also, and so much of culture, you know, we want to think that there's a kind of an authenticity that doesn't change. Well, in fact, there was a historical pageant movement around the country and even internationally, with people doing enactments of events from their history. And it's in that period, 1905 to 1915. And the Santa Fe Fiesta started out with 3 days, one enacting Pueblo culture, one Hispanic, one Anglo. And there was a kind of evolutionary progress of civilization implicit in these things. And the Indian Day very quickly shifted to the August Indian Market as a separate event. And then the Anglo Day, you know, which was commemorating General Kearny occupying Santa Fe, was kind of unsettling for people. And so after 2 or 3 years, they let that part go, and that's how it became not a full historical pageant, but focused on the Reconquest as the reenactment.
It also, when you talk about that, it brings up this question for me of how we know our history. So in the days before the barrage of television and movies and just the infinite number of stories that we have coming at us every day, it seems like there might have been a time where the stories that we knew and the stories that really defined us might happen in pageants on the plaza.
Well, you know, I think the great thing about, really, if you look at the plaza and you read it as if it were a text, there are so many different histories that are our history, and it's a different kind of living history. You know, the monument in the center and the monument where the word, I think, what is it, savages, Chris, is etched out of the stone.
Right.
You know, that commemorates and how that becomes a part of the dialogue. Different people assert ownership, not just permanently, but in different days and different times. So it becomes a living embodiment of the different layers of history, whether you're seeing, you know, Mexican music on the plaza or a bluegrass band or a rock and roll band. It's all present, and it's a living history, and it's very different from the kind of history that our young people a lot of times are getting by sitting in front of a computer.
Right.
And it's a living place that breathes. It draws us in. It's just vital to what, and I think that's why Chris originally conceived the project.
Well, and there are these sets of mytho-historic ritual celebrations in the Hispanic villages and also in some of the pueblos, Los Comanches, Los Marochines, which are about New Mexico history. They're about the raiding between the Hispanic and Pueblo villages and the Comanches. They're about the two cultures mixing. They're about conquest. They're about mestizaje, about the racial and cultural mixing. And these are public celebrations enacted year after year, and so the kids that grow up in those communities, they learn their history as a story, but they learn it as a ritual, and as a ritual which is symbolically ambiguous, symbolically rich, that people, I mean, it almost becomes a kind of community shared, you know, subconscious memory.
The book is called The Plazas of New Mexico. Chris Wilson is author, I guess co-author. There's various people who have written essays in this wonderful book. And Miguel Gandert is photographer. There are also many historical photographs. A panel discussion about this book will be happening this Sunday, the 16th of October at 2 o'clock at the New Mexico History Museum Auditorium here in Santa Fe. It's free. It's open to the public. There's a book signing. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Well, thanks for having
us. Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.